guys, welcome back to Wine Crime and TV Time. I'm Kaylee.
And I'm Emily.
And Merry Christmas!
Woo! So we have a
special second part of our episode from yesterday today. So yeah, this is going to be part two of the JonBenet Ramsey case, which I also forgot in
yesterday's episode to talk about an update on Heidi Broussard.
Oh, yeah.
So, as I was right, because everybody was trying to claim that it was the husband.
I didn't really think it was.
No, but, like, everybody was saying that they thought it was the fiancé.
Yeah.
So, Heidi Broussard, unfortunately, was found, and she was found dead in her, like, one of her best friend's trunks. And it turned out that one of her best friends had, it seems this way, I mean, there's obviously still an investigation going, but it seems that her best friend had faked a pregnancy and killed Heidi to steal her baby.
But, like, also, like, it's so strange to me because obviously they're best friends. Mm-hmm. So obviously they knew that there was a baby and they probably seen the baby on social media. And what, then the baby was just automatically just going to become...
Right.
And also,
I don't know what her plan was.
I wonder how far along, quote unquote, she was pregnant because it wouldn't add up.
Claimed she had the baby.
Oh, she
when
did.
When she was at the hospital, because she was at the hospital when Heidi had the baby, she was, like, sending her family pictures of her with the baby, that she had just had this baby.
I didn't read that
much. Yeah.
Okay.
And, yeah, I guess that she was, like, living in this house and with her landlord, who was also her boyfriend, but he, like, didn't want to be with her anymore because I guess she was crazy.
Clearly.
And he tried to kick her out, but then she told him that she was pregnant, so he let her stay. And I don't know, I guess she would, like, get into fights with him whenever, this is, like, all speculation.
Did she have, like, a fake belly?
She must have, I guess. Mm. But, yeah, she would, like, get into fights with him and didn't want him to be, like, involved in going to the doctor's appointments and stuff like that. And, like, she just had this baby in a birthing center. So.
Okay.
Yeah. But Margot is safe and okay. I mean, they were doing a whole, like, CPS investigation. They had to make sure, they had to do, like, a DNA test to make sure that she was Margot, mm-hmm. and she actually got to go home yesterday, so mm-hmm. I thought that was really nice for the family that they got for to have Christmas. Her home for Christmas, especially because they don't have Heidi, but I just wanted to do a little update on that. I meant to do that yesterday.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, so
let's get back into JonBenet.
So, as I made clear in the first episode, the Ramseys were definitely possible suspects. Okay, that doesn't make sense, though, that I said definitely possible. But I did just say that. In this case. And from the ransom note, to the paper it was written on, to the pen it was written with, Patsy's handwriting seeming to be comparable to the handwriting on the note, the weird pineapple, there were just, like, a lot of strange things, and it seemed that people would tend to point fingers at Patsy and John Ramsey, though. Burke, JonBenet's brother, was also considered super suspicious, but, you know, he was only 10 at this time of this crime, so a lot of people would also say, like, I don't know, like, is it possible that this 10-year-old, like, killed his 6-year-old sister?
Yes.
Yeah. But we know that they were all considered suspects, and we'll definitely be going back to them, but I want to talk about some other potential suspects in this case. So, in an interview with Boulder Police Department, this was at the same time as Patsy's interview, the one where she was like, go back to the drawing board. Mm-hmm. I didn't do it. Mm-hmm. They also were interviewing John Ramsey in a separate room, and he suggests that maybe Bill McReynolds could be a suspect in killing JonBenet. So, this would become known as the Santa Claus theory. Bill Reynolds was a friend of the Ramsey family, and he had this, like, big white beard and he resembled, like, Santa Claus. And he would even play Santa Claus for the children around the holidays, and JonBenet and Burke both loved him. JonBenet was, like, fascinated by him. She thought that this was Santa, you know what I mean? So she, like, wanted to be, like, perfect around him. So weeks after JonBenet's murder, Bill was on the Today Show, and there was something, like, really off and eerie
about
him.
Why was he on the Today Show?
I don't exactly know, but they were talking about, like, he was, like, in the crowd.
Oh, okay.
Outside. Oh. And they were, like, talking about the case, and, like, he was there, and they, like, interviewed him. But, like, in the video, I watched a 3-part documentary that was on Investigation Discovery, and I know that it's on there. They show it. And you can, like, see his actual face. But it is just so creepy the way he, like, smiles at the camera. It's, like, Duper's Delight, like, they call it, where, like, he's, like, smiling, like, he's hiding something. And if you can find it anywhere, I highly suggest, like, watching it. But he claimed to be, like, extremely close to the family, and he had just seen JonBenet before her death, like, this, that, and the other thing. It's just very weird. And the day before Christmas, JonBenet even took him on a private tour of the entire home. And the weird thing about this is it would make sense that he would be familiar with
the layout. If he
just got a tour of her whole home. And could he have given her the pineapple?
Maybe.
Because wouldn't you think that he would have, like, Santa gloves on? So, before Christmas, I'm not sure if it was that night or not, but he had given JonBenet a note that was recovered at the house. I think it was in the garbage, and it said, "Something special will happen to you after Christmas," which is weird. So these were definitely, like, red flags for law enforcement and seemed extremely strange and creepy. But one thing that made it even weirder was about Bill's daughter and what had happened to her. So 22 years to the day of JonBenet's murder, Bill McReynolds' daughter and a friend were kidnapped and molested by a sexual predator, and the predator was never found. And on top of this, Bill's wife Janet wrote a play 20 years earlier about a young girl being tortured and murdered, dying in the basement. And it was said to be based on a missing 16-year-old Indianapolis girl who was tortured and murdered and her body was left in the basement. Speculators also claim that they think that SBTC could stand for Santa Bill the Critic, as Bill was Santa and his wife was a critic. She was a play critic or movie critic, I forget. Also, before Bill's death, so he had this little vial of glitter that JonBenet gave to him, and he wanted to be buried with the vial of
glitter. Oh, so he creepy.
Super creepy. And as strange as this is, when police looked into Bill, he had an alibi. He was eating Christmas dinner an hour and a half away with his family and slept through the night.
Pineapple and milk.
Yeah, right? And they couldn't find any hair or DNA of his at the Ramsey's house. And considering the fact that he had a full beard, you would think that that would be left behind, like, somewhat.
But you would also think that if he got a tour of the house, there'd be something in the house somewhere.
True.
Even if it was two nights prior.
Very true. And to be honest, like, they couldn't confirm, like, his wife and him were each other's alibis, so that doesn't necessarily mean anything, and they think they did something together. And they couldn't really confirm that his son was with them that night, because that was what they said at first. But he had recently underwent a major heart and lung surgery, and it was pretty extensive on the body.
How old was this guy?
He was old. Okay. He was, like, in his 70s, I think. He also, and he had a history of heart problems. He also had gastric bypass not long before, so he had, like, a pretty crazy scar. So it would kind of make it very difficult for him to be, like, carrying
climbing in
JonBenet
and out of a window, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, yeah. So he was, and they said he was extremely frail. They also got DNA samples, fingerprints, and handwriting samples from him and his wife, and they were ultimately excluded. But I still find that weird. I don't know. There's something very weird about that whole scenario. Like, I would not be surprised if it turned out that he did it. He did pass away, so even if
you
he did, we're
do
never going to know.
It. Yeah.
So 4 years later in December, Boulder police got a call from the University of Colorado campus police alerting them that they had just arrested a 38-year-old man for trespassing. And he had a backpack with a poem inside.
What a weirdo.
And it was about JonBenet, and it was called Ode to JonBenet. And I can't find this anywhere. I wanted to, like, see if I could find it and read it, but I couldn't find it anywhere. And a stun gun. And his name was Gary Oliva.
Sounds like a copycat.
Yes. This guy is the weirdest guy. All these people are really weird, but anyway. So he was a convicted child sex offender in Oregon, where he'd molested a young girl. And he also had spent some time in prison after attempting to strangle his mother with a telephone cord. Yeah.
Does he also kill people with bowling pins?
Not that I've come to find. So he was also a diagnosed paranoid schizophrenic.
That makes sense.
He'd also been homeless for a period of time. And he actually spent time living in a church while he was homeless, 10 houses down from the Ramsey home. So, there was also a candlelight vigil held 1 year after the murder of JonBenet, like, to the day. And Gary Oliva showed up there. Yeah, which is weird. And they say, like, when people, like, commit crimes, like, murder people, they, like, show up back. Like, they'll show up at, like, the funeral and stuff like that because it, like, makes them, like, so, like, proud of what they've done. Mm. It's very, like, fucked up, but... And, yeah. So, Gary claimed that, like, when he was interrogated by police, he claimed that it's true that he was, like, very obsessed with JonBenet. He, like, loved her. He said he had dreams about her. He had a shrine of her in his home.
Oh.
And he would cut out pictures of her and put them on Monopoly money. Very weird. But he insists that he would never hurt JonBenet because he loved her so much. And he would cry when looking at pictures of her. He claims that his friend gave him this stun gun for his protection, and ultimately police couldn't put him at the scene of the crime. His handwriting didn't match up, and there was no DNA evidence that he'd ever really been there. So they really couldn't pin anything down.
There was no DNA evidence that, like, anyone was there, so...
Right, and, you know, the police are really, like, hell-bent on this DNA evidence that was in, or the DNA that was in her underwear, and it's not linking to anybody, and I don't think that's the key in solving this case, and I think they're wasting their time by... only focusing on that.
Right.
But this is what's crazy is, like, in cases, I, like, never believe in coincidences. But both of these people just have, like, some really weird, crazy coincidences.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I could see both of them turning out to be the killer.
Yeah.
So now we're going to move on to another strange suspect. This one's really weird. They're all really weird.
I have a question.
Sure.
So was Santa actually buried with the glitter? You said he was dead, right?
Yeah, I don't know. Mm. I think. I know that was, like, a request he had.
Mm. I wonder.
I do wonder. Probably. So, on Valentine's Day 1997, 26-year-old Michael Helgoth was found dead in his home with a gunshot wound to the head and a gun next to him, and it was considered a suicide. So, this is right after JonBenet's death. A week after the ransom note was released and about, like, the amount requested being $118,000, one of Mike's friends, John Kennedy, contacted the police and told them that the month before JonBenet's death, Mike had told him that about a deal that he and his business partner, who was actually his brother, would each be pulling in about $50,000 to $60,000. However, when John asked about it in the future, Mike had said that the deal had fallen through. So John goes on to talk about how Mike would shoot cats, like, on the ground. Wait, what? Oh, he would shoot cats and, like, kill them, and, like, he would pick up kittens and throw them on the ground and kill them.
I don't even like cats, so I wouldn't do that.
No, like, but really fucked up. And Michael also had sexual assault on his record. His girlfriend at the time had caught him naked in bed with her daughter on top of him.
Cool.
And he said that he, like, couldn't trust himself around her. Like,
how old was her daughter?
I couldn't find that anywhere. Oh my God. I also wondered. But I would imagine young if it was a sexual... Well, I guess it doesn't matter that it's sexual assault, but I don't know. So, also, in the September before JonBenet was killed, John Kennedy claims he remembers Mike saying to him, "I wonder what it would be like to crack a human skull." And as we know, like,
her skull
was cracked. And when looking at crime scene photos of at Michael's house, they noticed that Michael had a baseball cap on that said SBTC on it, which was what the ransom note was, like, signed.
Mm-hmm.
From what I understand, that stood for Santa Barbara Tennis Club.
Okay.
There were also high-tech boots right near the door in his bedroom. And a stun gun was right near his arm. They also noticed that a pillowcase had a bullet hole in it. And that was weird because it's like somebody was like shooting into the pillow to like quiet the gun. But why would you be like trying to silence your suicide? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Who cares who hears it? And they also noticed that Mike was right-handed, and where he was shot from the left, and the gun laid next to his right hand. So, super weird. The bullet also never exited his body. That doesn't really matter. I just wanted to put that out. It's also been speculated that Mike was killed by his brother slash business partner, because Mike was going to go rat about the two of them killing JonBenet together. And I do find this one interesting because of, like, all of those... like, weird circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it could make sense that they were going to go kidnap her and something went wrong and I don't know. Yeah. He killed her.
Yeah.
But police were not interested in him as a suspect. And I think that this is because maybe of how much it was, like, staged to look like he had something to do with JonBenet. The hat that said SBTC, mm-hmm. the boots that were clearly in the picture, the stun gun next to his arm. Like,
yeah, why would the stun gun be next to his arm?
Yeah. I mean, he did have, like, a huge collection of stun guns, from what I understand. Very weird, but he did. Mm-hmm. And, but Lou Smith, the detective who was looking into... who was hired by the DA that was looking into the case, who thought there was an intruder, mm-hmm. He was interested in him as a suspect. And when the Ramsey's investigators, because they had their own investigators looking into everything, when they questioned Boulder Police Department about the high-tech boots, they were told that the boots didn't match the partial print, but they were never told why or how they came to that conclusion. Mm. Just a little weird.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, actually, Lou Smith decides to resign from the case because he felt that regardless of what he found or anybody found, John and Patsy were going to be convicted of this crime, and he couldn't, like, sit by and watch it happen. Yeah.
Okay.
So 2 years go by with little information, and in August of 1998, the DA elected to assemble a grand jury to determine if there was enough evidence to charge one of the suspects that they had with JonBenet's death. So on September 15th, 1998, the jury examines all the evidence involved, which was 30,000 exhibits of evidence.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. And they met for 13 months discussing this. That's a long time.
Yeah.
But in October of 1999, the grand jury disbanded. And the DA announced, now he never said that the grand jury didn't find anything, but he said his team did not have enough evidence to charge anybody with the crime at this time, and the case remained open. So, I don't really know why, but a lot of people are kind of confused about that because they're like, well, did the grand jury decide this or did you decide this?
Right.
So, it's a little weird. And a lot of people think, too, that since the Ramseys had all this money that there were people being paid off.
Mm.
I don't know.
That's, like, normal, like, nowadays.
At least. Yeah, it is. But I don't know. I don't know. I guess we'll never know. So, this is so weird. All these people are so weird to me. But yeah, obviously, I mean, back to Michael Helgoth, he was obviously dead, but nothing really came of that. They just never really looked into it. So a year or two go by and a man named Michael Tracy begins to make documentaries on the murder, and he'd received emails from a user that went by the name of Daxus, who claimed he knew things about the murder and about the case. And he sent a poem about loving JonBenet. And the emails had, like, kept getting weirder and weirder, and they would, like, go into detail about the crime. And Daxus claims that he's a pedophile and his favorite age was 6. Mm. He claims that he killed JonBenet during sex and accidentally hit her in the head. He claimed he wanted Patsy to know this and that he was JonBenet's lover.
Okay.
Yeah. So Tracy tells the new DA about this information and claims that she was extremely suspicious of Daxus because of the fact that he claimed JonBenet had a runny nose at the time of the death, and there was actually mucus on the tape by her mouth, like, right above.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, how would he have known that? And also, he knew that JonBenet had a bracelet with her name on it, and the weird thing about that is, like, the fact that she wore this bracelet with her name on it, and...
it had Christmas's date on it, too,
yeah,
right?
So she had just gotten it,
mm-hmm.
you would think. So that's weird. However, I don't know what kind of information was out there on, like, to be able to be found at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Because this was the early 2000s now.
So there's probably more out there.
Yeah. And who knows? But he knew this, which is, like, very, like, close weird. To the mm-hmm. yeah investigation. So Tracy calls Daxus, and he admits to killing JonBenet on the phone. And they finally trace him back to Bangkok, Thailand. And it turns out that this person is John Mark Carr from Alabama. And John had been married twice. His first wife was a 13-year-old girl.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. He was also a grade school teacher.
How old was he when he married his first wife?
I could not find that, but...
probably not 13,
not
though.
13.
Okay.
That's for sure. At this point, the DA, Mary Lacey, gets a warrant to arrest him, so they extradite him back to the U.S. And it had turned out that he was actually previously arrested in 2001 and on possession of child pornography. And that's when he fled to Bangkok. And then, yeah, now he's being extradited back. And when they look into the DNA from the crime scene and JonBenet, the DNA did not match. They could not even place him in Boulder the day of JonBenet's murder.
Okay.
So John Mark Carr was never convicted. However, he was interviewed 20 years later. This was actually in that investigation discovery that I watched. And he still claims that he accidentally killed JonBenet Ramsey. Like, to this day. He's like, why would I say that and risk spending 30 years? It's just very strange. And actually, there was... I can't remember the guy's name, but there was somebody that was on the show that was actually talking about people who confessed to...
There's so many.
...crimes. Yeah. And it, because it, like, makes them relevant. Mm. So that could be the case. But I just wanted to bring him up because he's literally the only person who's ever been arrested in connection with... JonBenet. And there was another one that came out maybe a year or so ago. Do you remember that?
I do. Because I remember I tagged you in it because I was like, oh, I've been so solved. And you're like, yeah, no.
Yeah. And I'm like, people need to just stop confessing to things that they didn't do. But I also want to note that Gary Oliva was also arrested in 2016 on child pornography charges. That's the one who would cut her face and put it on Monopoly money.
Yeah.
So those are some like strange suspects that I truthfully would not be shocked if there was proof that any of them did it. You know what I mean? Especially Santa.
Santa, yeah.
Santa and his wife. Like, I find them very weird. I do feel like the Michael Helgoth thing is, like, a setup, to be honest. Like, that hat, the SBTC, like, what are the odds? It seems like
it's a setup. Yeah. For sure.
But I don't know. I mean, we'll never know. Mm-hmm. So, I want to go back to the Ramses suspects, because we didn't really talk about that in this episode. And we did touch on that quite a bit last episode, but yeah. I just want to talk about a couple of different things. And in 2016, a retired FBI agent, Jim Clemente, forms a team of investigators to go into, to look into the evidence of the JonBenet Ramsey case and, like, put everything to the test. And he also had Dr., I think it's Henry Lee is his name. He's, like, a very well-known forensic scientist.
Yeah, I feel like I've heard that name.
Yeah, so he actually did, he was hired by Michael Peterson.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. So he worked that. He also did, I've seen him in so many different cases, to be honest. So, while I think that he's, like, a great forensic scientist and whatnot, it does seem like he kind of makes theories based on what he's hired to do. Do you know what I mean, though? Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Just a little weird. But I just wanted to say that. But I also want to say that I'm not saying that the evidence that they had looked into is actual, like, actually factual and proof that the Ramseys did it or involved. Because when I watched the CBS documentary that they did on this whole thing, it's so unbelievably biased. And you can tell that, like, they're searching to prove that the Ramseys did it.
Okay.
So that kind of, like, got a little under my skin because I didn't feel like it was an unbiased thing and they, like, found this stuff. I felt that it was biased. But it's interesting to see what they came across. So they first looked into the 911 call and the last second or two that Patsy thinks she hung up the phone, which I talked about in the first episode. Mm-hmm. But you can still hear. They claim, like, that they slowed it down and cleared the background as best as you can. And you hear three voices. And I can't really hear this, and I want to play it, but I don't know that it's going to get picked up or you're going to hear anything, but I'm going to play it and then say what they claim was said at first.
Please, take a deep breath.
Please, hurry.
Patsy?
There's 6 seconds of something that's inaudible.
Patsy thought the phone call was ended. The last thing she ever thought was somebody was still listening to her.
Patsy?
So you can, like, kind of hear a little better there, but it's really hard to hear, I think.
Because they're not speaking to Burke, because Burke did this.
Right. So they claim, Jim Clemente and his team claim that you can hear Patsy either saying, "Help me, Jesus," twice, or "Help me, Jesus, what did you do?" And you also hear a male adult voice saying, "We're not speaking to you." And then a young child voice saying, "What did you find?" And when I listen, I can, like, I can get it, but, like, not, like, I'm not, like,
I feel like
sold.
It's, like, kind of a reach.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. I've also seen somewhere that, like, they claim that you can hear Burke saying, "Get off me." I don't know. I understand what they're saying in three different voices, though. I could totally pick up a woman's voice, a male voice, and a younger person's voice. But I don't know. So they also discuss the ransom note and how it made no sense. And they all sit down to write this ransom note out. All these people sit down together. They write out the ransom note. And mind you, they're copying this ransom note. They're not, like, thinking of it as they're writing it. They're just copying it. And it took them 21 and a half minutes just to copy it. That's a long time to sit there and write a note. But if the theory that the intruder broke in ahead of time,
sat there,
wrote it. Yeah. Like, I could understand. So they also talk about the flashlight, and what is strange about the flashlight is it completely fits, like, the head of the flashlight fits the missing fragment of JonBenet's skull that I talked about, like, that same exact, like, rectangular thing. And when they recreate this, they, like, use a, like, a dummy head or whatever, and they whack the flashlight. It has, like, the exact same, like, fracture and crack stemming from it that her head had.
That makes sense.
So they're led to believe that it was the flashlight that
killed her.
And this flashlight was left, like, on the counter or something like that. The one that, yeah, with no fingerprints. So they discussed the fact that it had no fingerprints or DNA on it or even on the batteries. And so they kind of, they buy the exact same flashlight and they recreate it. So they, like, touch the flashlight and stuff, they turn it on and off, they open it up, put batteries in as you would, and close it, and they swab everything and test for DNA, and their DNA comes up, the fingerprints come up on everything. So that was a little weird, I thought. But I just don't get why there wouldn't be, like, who's going in and cleaning the batteries of the flashlight? Like, someone I find that
committed a murder,
I guess, but, like, why, if you committed this murder, fine. But, like, why are you opening the flashlight, taking the batteries out, wiping them off? Like, that has nothing to do with the murder.
Yeah. But it might have their DNA on the batteries.
Right, but
because it might be Burke, it might be the mom, it might be the dad, and their DNA would be on
the batteries. Well, general. Right, but it's their house, it would be their...
Right, but that's still...
I suppose. I just, like, well, I'm not planning to ever kill anybody, but I would never think to, like, open it up and clean the batteries. That's all.
Yeah.
Just a little weird.
Yeah.
Or maybe they put the batteries in there with gloves on.
Santa did it.
Maybe. So they actually, this was kind of really cool. They recreate the Ramsey's whole house in a workspace, or a warehouse, I mean, space. And it's, like, if you, like, watch this, it's crazy because it's, like, side by sides, it looks exactly the same. So they do that, and they recreate this, the window, the broken window in the basement, and they put the whole theory to the test. So this window, there was a grate above the window, and in order to get in, you'd have to, like, lift the grate up and then go in, and on the grate, there was actually, there's a picture that there's, like, foliage kind of around it, which would mean that that would actually be disturbed if somebody lifted that up to go in, and also they have a crime scene photo where they noticed, like, let's say this was the window, in that corner, there's a cobweb in the crime scene photo. So their whole thing was, okay, if somebody came in through this window, then they would disrupt that cobweb because it's such a small window. So they put that to the test just like Lou Smith did when he kind of came through the window. So they did the same thing, and there was no way to get through without disturbing that cobweb because it was so narrow. And this was a woman came in, so she's more smaller, narrow than a man would be, and she even disrupted the cobweb. So that was a little interesting that they did that. But, yeah. So then they go on to test the stun gun, because that's what they believe left those marks. And they test it on a guy.
Okay.
And when they shock him with it, he, like, jolts up and, like shoots across the room. He's like, I feel, like, literally a surge of energy in my body. And he's like, I just don't understand why you would use that on a sleeping child. He's like, I can't imagine it knocking them out. I imagine it waking them up and pushing them away from you. Also, when they looked at the marks that it made, it actually made two burns, like, that were probably about, like, that long. And they were closer to, like, either, I think they were closer together. So they weren't, like, the two marks that JonBenet had, actually. They were more so, like, burns. And it was very, it was totally different from what they had said that they were.
And I don't know for sure that they used the exact same stun gun that was led to believe. You know what I mean? So, like, that could mean nothing, but I thought that was a little interesting that they were two totally different things. But what they did find was in the basement, they had, like, this train room that had, like, a train, train tracks
and
stuff.
That's what he was talking about, yeah.
Yeah, so in there, the train tracks that they had, like, kind of linked into each other, but they weren't, like, plastic. They had two little metal prongs that were literally the exact same size as her wounds on her back and the same width apart.
Okay.
Which was interesting. So their theory was, like, maybe he accidentally killed her and then, like, tried to poke her awake or something with it. I don't know. But I thought that was interesting. But that being said, I don't know. This is what I... Well, I guess we'll get back to that. So they also discussed the pineapple and the fingerprints and how much... how it was served with how much... like, a much larger spoon than Patsy would have ever served it with. They talk about the fact that half of the bowl of pineapple and milk was still there, meaning, like, whoever was eating it was interrupted by something. Not necessarily, but I understand what they're saying. And, yeah, they talk about the fact that, like, Burke is the one who obviously was eating that pineapple, and there was pineapple found in JonBenet's system. So it leads you to believe that they both were eating that pineapple. Mm-hmm. Whether he had anything to do with it or anything, at some point they were both eating this pineapple. So, they also test that underwear theory about, because that's what the police are holding on to, is the DNA in the underwear being relevant. And they test the underwear theory and they open up a new package of underwear and they swab it. They test it for DNA and everything, and it comes back with DNA on it. And this is fresh out of the package. They all have gloves on. But that means that it could have been transferred in the manufacturing process, process, not from a suspect at all. So that's kind of what they're saying is, like, the saliva sweat DNA is not even that important because it could be from...
the factory.
Yes, totally. And the fact that those underwear came fresh out of a package.
Right.
So they suggest that JonBenet stole Burke's pineapple and... he grabbed the flashlight in the kitchen and hit her over the head, accidentally killing her, and that his parents helped cover it up. Burke has since filed a lawsuit against CBS for defamation of character in the amount of $750 million.
Okay.
After that came out, because they clearly, like, roasted his ass. Like, they were like, he did it, basically, without saying that. The two parties have since settled on an amount, but will not comment any further. And Patsy Ramsey passed away from ovarian cancer in 2006.
Aww.
Yeah, super sad. And JonBenet
would have been 16 then.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So early.
That is. Yeah, only 10 years later.
Mm-hmm.
John Ramsey, weirdly enough, began dating Beth Holloway, who was the mother of Natalie Holloway.
I was just going to ask, yeah.
And she went missing in Aruba after a high school graduation trip and was never found. I thought that was really weird. I
loved that story. Like, not loved, but, you know.
It was a really interesting one. The two wound up going separate ways and remained friends, and now John is married to his third wife. Burke Ramsey wound up doing an interview on Dr. Phil that was somewhat cringy and uncomfortable, if you ask me. He graduated from Purdue and is now a software engineer who works from home. He claims that he doesn't like to go out and deal with people.
That's valid, considering his background. I totally get it.
Yeah. So, I don't know. This case always, like, just blows my mind.
I think either Burke did it or Santa.
That's what I mean. Like, I go back and forth a little bit, because this is my whole thing with the Burke theory, is that's where I usually wind up.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't comprehend all of the whys to everything. I can't comprehend why... she stole his pineapple, and then what, he hit her in the with the flashlight in the kitchen, or he hit her in the basement? Because if he hit her in the kitchen, why is he poking her with train tracks that were in the basement? How did she get to the basement? Why is she tied up?
Mm-hmm.
Why is there fragments of the paintbrush inside of her? Why is there a little bit of blood on her?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I can't imagine as a parent going to that extent to cover it up, and, like, it's not even a good cover-up.
Yeah, it's not.
But then I think about that 3-page ransom note.
The word spelled wrong.
Yes. Like, and if it's Santa, Santa was at that party.
Mm-hmm.
I
I think.
No, you said he was.
But I think he was having dinner with his family, actually. Hmm. He was at the party the day before. Hmm. I don't know.
I still think Burke did it.
I think that, like, that makes the most sense. Like, when I look at everything as a whole, it, like, always comes back to that. But yeah. Then there are just, like, certain things that I'm like, why? Like, the underwear. Why? The nightgown.
Yeah, I don't think he would have, like, shoved something up inside his sister.
No. I don't think that he would have sexually assaulted her. Mm-mm. And the parents definitely would have. They definitely, if there's one thing, they definitely did love JonBenet. Mm-hmm. Like, they are devastated by this. That's why I don't think they killed her.
But that's why they also love their son, and that's why I'm like, they could have covered for their son.
Of course, that's all they have left.
Yeah.
Also, I don't know that I mentioned this, but I totally forgot about this portion. John Ramsay's oldest daughter, Elizabeth, she actually also died that year, in January of that year. So she died in January, and JonBenet in December. She died in, like, a really bad car accident, mm-hmm. but just, like, so crazy for him, mm-hmm. that, like, two kids, but... To be honest, I mean, why'd they call the police, though, and leave her in the basement? This is the other thing, I think, is, okay, maybe it was, let's say it was Burke, and Patsy helps cover it up, but John doesn't know anything. John wakes up, and that's when she's, like, rushed.
Yeah.
And calls the police. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Why that stupid ransom note?
Well...
We're literally never going to know, but...
Well, is this case still open? Did they close it?
I think it's still open.
Good.
But no one's ever going to know. Anything,
yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I usually do go back to the fact that I think that Burke did it, and it had to be somebody in the house.
Yeah. Because there's no sign of forced entry or anything, and obviously he was already in the house.
And, like... If you hear all this commotion, you just stay in bed.
Right. And he's like, well, I think she might have gone missing, but what are the odds of that?
Yeah, just... It's he's so very weird. Strange.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I truly, every time I look into this, I, like, think something different. But for the most part, I do go back to...
To Burke.
Yeah. It's the only thing that really does add up in my mind, but we'll never know.
He has a great name.
I know. And then I'm like, did the dad know, or did he not know?
I feel
and then
like,
now he knows?
I feel like the dad did not know.
I think he was devastated to find her.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then again, I don't know.
And we're never gonna know.
I know. Santa's creepy.
I think all Santas are actually kind of creepy, if you ask me.
They are. So you're still, like, feeling that Burke did it?
Yeah, but there is a possibility that Santa did it. I mean, it is weird that he wanted to be buried with fucking glitter from her, and...
So did I, like, change your mind a little bit today?
No, I mean, you gave me more information,
like,
I would
about?
Say. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I feel like you were so, like, no, this happened.
I still kind of think that happened. But
I know,
now
but
there's
like,
the possibility
open.
That, okay, maybe Santa did it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think most things add up to... Somebody in that house doing it. Mm-hmm. It's just a crazy one. It honestly is. Because I feel like there's so much evidence, but also so little evidence.
And there's also so many people that are still coming out and saying they killed her. So.
I know. And there were so many people in that house. That's what really gets me, like, so irritated.
Yeah.
But the fact that that flashlight had nothing on it says to me that that's what she was hit with. They mm-hmm. cleaned it. Mm-hmm. But again, I just can't comprehend.
The batteries.
Yes. And the garrote. Mm-hmm. Like, the way she was, and the fact that there was sexual assault, like, present, kind of. Like, why would her parents do that?
Yeah.
Unless they're trying to, like, cover up again, but I don't know. I don't know.
We're never gonna know.
I know. It just drives me nuts, but...
Keeps you up at night.
It does.
Yeah.
It really does.
Yeah.
So. But, yeah, I guess that's all we have to say, right?
Yeah. Merry Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. So I hope everybody liked it. I hope I had the facts. Don't come at me if I said something wrong, but please do let me know. And yeah, tell us your opinions.
Yeah.
DM us.
Yeah, no, but do that.
So yeah, we'll talk to you guys on Friday. Merry Christmas. I hope everybody has a great time with their families and stay safe.
Mm-hmm. Don't get murdered.
Yes.
Watch TV. Don't let Santa touch you.
Yeah, definitely not.
And yeah, we'll talk to you later.
Bye.